I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land we are recording on, the Cammeraygal and the Guringai peoples, to their elders past, present and emerging, and we celebrate the ongoing connections to land and water. Today, I have the privilege of speaking with Vicky Haynes, an adventurer whose resilience and determination have taken her on awe-inspiring motorcycle expeditions, all while navigating the depths of grief and loss. In this episode, we also discuss many important issues such as resilience, the importance of community, and the beauty in aging, and that age has no limits, that with determination, we can conquer so much more that life has to offer.
Welcome to Sharing Stories, Changing Lives. The host, Karen Sander, has the privilege of interviewing individuals from all walks of life, each with their own powerful and inspiring stories. The guests share their life experiences, and in doing so, they celebrate the transformative magic of storytelling. To learn more, visit www.thestoryroom.au and explore the private membership area, the Backstage Pass.
And remember, at the end of this episode, Vicky and I will head backstage for a chat and unpack some of her tips and tricks to living life to the full. So welcome, Vicky Haynes.
Thanks, Karen, for having me on. I really appreciate your time.
I was lucky to be introduced to you through a friend, and the reason you're here is you're doing something so exciting shortly. That's what I want to delve into. So tell me a little bit about Vicky.
Vicky is a grandmother of an eight-month-old. She's a mother. She's someone that loves sport, loves the outdoors, and has recently found a absolute fascination with motorbikes and living life to the fullest. Yeah, that's Vic. She doesn't mind a laugh, doesn't take too many things too seriously, enjoys life to the end.
And what sort of a career have you had, Vicky?
I played a little bit of professional football when I was quite young and got a job with Wide World of Sports, Channel 9. They sent me to Los Angeles, where I got to cover a lot of news stories, see a lot of North America, felt very accomplished and confident that I could travel anywhere and go and do anything, given the severity of the area. Then went to London, did the same thing in London, traveled all throughout Europe. Then I went and lived in Paris, where I fell in love with the French language. And my daughter's father, and I fell pregnant in Paris, came home very quickly, arrived on the 1st of July and gave birth on the 13th of July. So that's my background. It's been in travel, news, media, which I've loved, and I've since worked on the A-League football and have just embraced the women's sport and how great we've done in the Women's World Cup.
Yeah, well, that was pretty amazing. The Matildas are going gung-ho at the moment, so you must have a smile from ear to ear.
It changed the playing field for me because I could talk confidently about being a female football player versus you're just a female playing football, you know, no one watches it, no one cares. So it really put it on the map for us. It was so exciting for all the international players, particularly the Matildas. They're all still celebrating how far we've come. So what I'll end up doing when I ride across the world, I'll end up at the Paris Olympics. So either be working on it or I'll actually be seeing the games. So I'm excited about that.
Except the other thing, you could just run in and sub on if someone gets hurt.
No, I'm not. I might be crazy, but I'm not stupid. Yeah, I'm born 1962, am 62, so I'm not about to think that. I tell you what, I did when the Olympics came to Australia, I said to my mum, you know what, I'm not that old. I think I was, what would I have been, 62, I was about 38, and I actually thought I was going to make it back into the Matildas team. I was like, really, Vic? No, you're not. I never did, but I tried. Always give it a go, I reckon.
Dream big.
Yeah.
It doesn't always happen, but it's a good dream.
Yeah, absolutely. So, no, but I've been involved with it ever since. So I love the sport and I'm really proud of how women's sport has changed, let alone in Australia, but all over the world.
Yeah. Well, you are certainly inspiring when it comes to motorcycling, and you have now ridden a motorcycle around Australia. And it was a form of healing and exploration. I want you to explain why, how, what happened along the way.
Yeah, so sadly, delightfully, I moved up to Nelson Bay, Port Stephens, after my brother had passed away, and he was one of the main carers. Like so many of us, we get the opportunity to care for our parents, and I was so lucky to be able to do that, and I cared for them for the last 6 years, where we just didn't care for each other, but we became each other's best friends. We really reconnected. I was older. I would listen more. I had more time for them. So my dad was my best friend. We played golf together. I did the community hall with mum. There was a huge reconnection. They were my best friends. I was with them 24/7. And from there, sadly, even though he was quite old, I wasn't ready for him to go because we'd spent so much time together. We left him at a retirement village on a Friday, and sadly he died on a Monday, calling me all weekend saying, get me out of here, get me out of here. It's not the place it is. I can't live like this. They'd been met and married, my parents, Milton and Joy, in 4 weeks. They met and married. And then after my dad passed on the 21st of November, my mum died 3 weeks later. So it's this beautiful story about the both of them. They're gorgeous.
And was your mum unwell?
She was unwell. So Dad and I were caring for her. But I think if he was still alive, she was still going to be alive. And she was giving it her best.
They were joined at the hip.
Oh, very, very.
And the heart.
Yeah. Oh, unbelievably so. She'd get jealous when we'd cook a meal together. But it was one, if you ever get that opportunity, and I know so many of us have, to reconnect and be with your parents, watch their love evolve and laugh and be so joyous of the moment. I never thought they were going anywhere. I really didn't. I thought they were there forever.
Like many women, and like many of us at this age, not just women, it's a time in our lives when we do lose our parents, and I've lost two in the last 7 years, and my mother only just passed 12 months ago at age 95. And, you know, there's, God, I miss her every day, I can't tell you. And those last few years of caring for her with my sister was just wonderful.
Yeah.
So motorcycling, you're talking about your parents, but where did the motorcycle journey come from?
Yeah, my next door neighbour and I had a midlife crisis, and we thought we'd get our L's at the age of 50. Now, I'd ridden motorbikes, trail bikes as a young kid, but I'd never ridden on the road because my parents wouldn't allow it. So I was very wishful of what they wanted, but I did get my bike and my bike license and started riding with a great group of friends. And from that, from 50 to now 62, I've been doing it for 12 years, but I didn't have a car. So I just rode everywhere on my bike, went camping, celebrated in the love and the passion, and the fellow bikers are some of my best friends. So from there, after Dad went, I went through his private belongings and I found Mum's diary of their trip around Australia. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I read that diary to my mum as she slowly passed at home, and she just got so much delight out of it. I promised her from reading her diary that I would follow their trip around Australia. So that's what I chose to do.
The bike that you rode, you gave them a very special name.
Yeah, well, luckily it worked because Dad's MI, Milton, and Mum's Joy, J-O-Y. So my bike is my joy ride. So I left on the same day that they did in their mum's diary, and I went everywhere. I ate every meal, pub meal that they had. I even ran out of petrol on the way into Normanton. I looked at the diary that night and I was like, oh, my God, Mum and Dad had run out of petrol. We had so many similarities and some things that they couldn't do at the time, like go to horizontal falls. Like every Australian's done a lap of Australia at one point in their life, but you don't want to miss things. You want to make sure you get up to horizontal falls, Ningaloo roofs, swim with the whale sharks, ride up to Cape Levique, break your leg. Yeah, broke my leg. And fell off the bike. But I knew Mum and Dad was with me. A car within 5 minutes pulled up behind me, and it was a doctor and a nurse that got the bike off me and put me in the back of their four-wheel drive and drove me into the campsite.
I thought you were going to say they got the bike off me, they set my leg on the spot, put a bit of plaster on, put me on the bike. I rode off into the distance.
Yeah, see you later. Wouldn't that, maybe that's a better story. No, I just, they looked after me that night. There was a nurse, there was a doctor at the campsite. We lit a fire, we told a few stories, but they shipped me out the next morning. They said probably best to get an x-ray and checked on. It was broken. And I spent 3 weeks just in the swimming pool in Broome where I recovered, put the boot back on and took off after 3 weeks.
Well, you're lucky you weren't in plaster from ankle to hip.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen. There's a understanding with people who ride bikes. It's you watching for idiots hitting you, not you hitting idiots. So we just got to make sure you keep an eye out for everybody else.
Well, you've ridden around Australia. Now, for a lot of people, riding around Australia on a motorcycle is something they're not going to do. But the thing you're about to do next, I probably won't ever meet anyone again in my lifetime that is doing what you're about to do. So blurt it out.
I got back after Australia and I just didn't feel like my journey had finished. I just didn't feel at ease. I just felt like there was more to do. And I've always wanted to ride a bike through Asia. I just didn't realise that it had to be my bike. So I have packed my motorbike up from Nelson Bay, rode it to Sydney, put it on a barge, and from the barge it ships it to Singapore. Now, I meet that next week. Well, I'm so excited to see it again. It's like a bit of a long-lost partner, really. But bike people will get that.
You're going to see my joy.
Yeah, exactly. I'll see my joy again. And then I ride my motorbike up. I land in Singapore. I ride it up through Malaysia, into Thailand, across to Cambodia, down to Vietnam, up the east coast of Vietnam, where I tuck into Laos. And from Laos, I cross into China, where I have to be guided. They won't let you. This isn't on Chinese internet, is it? They won't let you go in without being escorted out. So you get an escort when you arrive. So then I do the Silk Road, which I just can't wait.
What are you expecting when you hit the Silk Road? You're going to meet all the stans?
Yeah. I'm going into Kyrgyzstan at the end of it. From Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan to Mekistan, Tajikistan, and then into Tajikistan, I think that's the name. I don't really know the spelling, but I'll get that. Iran, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Georgia, Turkey, Bulgaria, and then hopefully I'll be on a Greek island very soon. And then after Greece, I'll beeline through to Italy and then Swiss Alps, and then probably I'll have to get to Paris by the 24th of July.
So this isn't you haven't got 2 years to do this. You've only got a few months.
Yeah, but then once I hit Paris and do the Olympics, I'll then continue to tour throughout Europe. And having lived in France, I really want to revisit the Bordeaux country, Spain, Italy, Portugal, up to Germany, through the Swiss Alps, round the Netherlands, Belgium. I've got a carnet that I can use on my bike for 12 months and end up in the UK, which is when my daughter has told me, Mum, you've got to be home for Christmas.
So you've got to be home for the Christmas 2024. Is that correct?
Correct.
Wow,
correct.
That's exciting. So, but look, there's so much to come over those next months. And tell me why you're actually doing this.
After I spoke earlier about Mum and Dad going, it broke me. Like you spoke earlier about losing your mum. And it's only very new. It's only been 12 months for yourself. Mine was both of them very quickly, and I didn't cope. I wandered the streets. I had nothing to live for because I just lost my two best friends. And as much as friends and family wanted to help, they couldn't because they didn't have the skills or the counselling to be able to get me out of the rut that I was in. The local community centre, Yakaba Centre, rang me and just said, well, we heard you having a bit of a hard time. we've got some people here that you might be able to talk to. And from there they said, come on in. And I did, and I connected with one of the counsellors there. And from that moment, I didn't look back, and they pretty much saved my life. Karen, it was, if it wasn't for them, that local community that offered free counselling, I wouldn't be here talking to you right now. And so I'm actually raising funds for this community centre, which allowed me to get on with life and embrace it, and I think that's what I'm doing. I'm embracing everything it is about life with the thought of mum and dad, but being able to still cope with the tools with grief counselling gave me.
It's easy to feel your pain, and to lose two parents at once would be absolutely just mind-blowingly sad and hard to cope with.
If you're interested in getting more involved in our community, connecting with people who share your interests, you can do this by visiting our website at www.thestoryroom.au.
Isn't it great that community can pull people back together, you know, with the, they've got the tools to help people. And, you know, in life, I think in general, Vicky, community, it doesn't matter some even about people being able to be, you know, counsellors or whatever, but community is so important in all of our lives.
Karen, 100%. The community that got behind me, that helped me on my way around Australia and supported me, I feel like I've got that here now when I go around the world, that I know that my daughter, who's struggling with me going away, very much so, she's a mother of an 8-month-old, and she's like, you know, Mum, why are you doing it? Why? You don't need to do it. You've got nothing to change. You know, you're great how you are, Mum. I was like, no, well, Charlie, I'm doing it because I can do it physically. I can do it mentally. And tomorrow that might change, Karen. And I want to be able to do everything I can before it's not possible. And we talk about going on cruises for the last time, cruise ships. And I remember when I bought Mum and Dad a flight to Fiji, the tickets were less expensive than the health insurance that I had to pay for them to go with me.
Oh, there's an age you get to and they want to charge you a fortune in health insurance, but you can't afford not to have it.
No, and you've got to admit all your ailments on the way. Well, yeah, I've had a scare with cancer, or I've had a knee hip replacement, or I've had a blah, 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 tick, 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 tick. Well, sorry, we can't insure you. You can't travel anymore, or you can't do what you wanted to do. So I'm doing it now while I can before I can't.
I really admire your spirit. And it's an important lesson for people who are listening, because you're never too old to get into life and do new things or try new things. And I know you haven't ridden across the world before, two continents, but how do you prepare emotionally, mentally, physically?
It's funny you ask that, Karen. I actually dropped the bike off at Australian Border Force, and Cecil from behind the counter came out, and I told him what I'd be doing, and here's a carnet for my bike, and I'm shipping it to Singapore. And he went, what do you want to do that for? I said, because I can. And he said, oh, do you think that's safe? I said, well, I don't know, Cecil. Do you know something I don't know? Is there something you're not telling me? I went, oh, well, I wouldn't do it. You're a Sheila. You shouldn't do it either. And I'm, well, Cecil, I'd like to be able to do it, be it a girl or not. I'm able to do it. But can you please tell me, is there anything I need to know? She said, oh, no, mate, I don't know. All right, signs away. See ya, bye. That was Australian Border Force.
Well, it's pretty scary when they can't give you a bit of advice. You know, so emotionally and mentally, how have you prepared? You must have things in place that you do for safety-wise so that you can take this journey.
I've been preparing for this, all the administration, for about the last 6 months. So all the visas, the carnet for the bike, the shipping of the bike, getting the bike ready. Then there's me. I've got to get me ready. So I've gone and had my teeth checked. I've gone and had all my injections. I've had my bloods taken. I walk every day. without loss, rain, hail or shine. I make sure I walk. I try to have a swim every day. I try to keep physically fit because sitting on the bike isn't actually physical, but it's mental. You're actually meditating while you're on the bike. So I find that quite cathartic, riding, meditating, thinking in a zone for a long period of time, watching. So I've been riding. I make sure I ride at least 2 or 3 hours a day. So I've got to get my bum ready too, because it can take a bit of a, it needs to be a bit hard. I wouldn't be lying if I didn't say that I got a hemorrhoids after 200 days and 36,000 kilometres around Australia.
I can imagine you would. And did you ever look at the bike and go, oh, really? My bum doesn't want to sit on you?
Oh, no. No, it's the opposite. I get excited when I see it. If I haven't ridden it, it's this delight. It's like my little joy of love, you know, that I get on and embrace it. And once I'm in it, I've got my gear on, I'm on the bike and I'm moving and I'm out there and I've got all these amazing smells and vision and it's escape. It's meditating, escaping. But it's called moving meditation. Funnily enough, I came back to a yoga class when I got back from Australia. And I thought I'd do a bit of, you know, heavy breathing and, you know, I'm a bit more of a sweaty person myself. And I went to a yoga class and all I did is laugh the whole time. They wanted you to get in all these stupid positions and do a downward dog. And I was just like, oh, well, whatever. Anyway, I basically was the joke of the class. But at the end of the class, these other four people entered the room and they said, oh, we're just going to sit here and we're going to look at each other for the next hour.
Yes.
I went, oh, this sounds challenging. I'll give this a go. So I sat in a room with three other strangers and we looked at each other in that 60-minute window, didn't mention, say a word, didn't know each other's names and just went, wow. And if you ever do it, it's quite confrontational. It's not confrontational, it's quite engaging. Have you ever done it?
Yes, I have, but not for an hour, maybe for 10 minutes.
Okay.
And it can, like you said, it is confrontational and you just, it's hard to look at someone and look into their eyes and just look at them. Yeah.
Yeah, but there was a real connection.
A real connection, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Not one word. We walked out of that room. We all went and had a cup of tea and went, oh, hi, my name's Vic. Hi, what's your name? Oh, I'm Susie. I'm Joe. I'm Jeff, whatever. Sorry, I can't remember your names, but you're amazing people. When I met you, I thought, wow, what a great group. And they said, oh, you've been meditating. I went, nah, I meditate? What do you mean meditate? I don't go to yoga. That was just a one-off, blah, blah, blah. And they said, no, you meditate. And that's when I realized by being on the bike, I was meditating, reconnecting with whatever, saying g'day to mum, having an argument, yelling in my, crying, sobbing, doing all that on the bike. It just allowed me to be present because I had to be present. I couldn't take my eyes off the road, off the job, but it would also allow me to meditate and be in a place of contentment and relaxation and enjoyment and yeah, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
And what sort of things do you think you might come up against or along the way? I know you can't see the future, but you know, in your own mind, are you prepared for certain things, for riding through countries where it may not be so safe? Or I mean, China, you have someone that's guiding you in and out.
Yeah.
What about some of the other countries, the stands along the Silk Road? And you mentioned going into Georgia, Iran.
I've been aware of that. On the Australian trip, sadly, I came across someone that had been in their caravan, left the door open, sadly had been robbed, raped, and was a young woman similar age as mine. And from that day on, I had a hose that I put in my jacket of my bike, my bike jacket, so I could still ride on it. So you can imagine there's a hose that you'd cut for a bong not that I know that what a bong looks like or anything, but I've seen pictures.
Yep.
But a bong, and it slips out. So if I am in a situation that I feel threatened, and that's also reading energy and body language, which I've got old enough to been in a lot of hairy situations to through media to be able to say, oh, this isn't right. So, you know, use it to maim them, be the face or the leg, jump on the bike and get out of there. So someone said, oh, that's great, Vic. He said, but now I've got, now they've given me a torch which I can put in my hand, not hurt my hand if I was to hit them, but it's got a pointy end and use that as a protection. My daughter talked me out of a gun. She said, Mum, it's probably not a good idea. They may use that on you. Mace, I'm still deciding on that, but I'm not looking for it. I think if there's that feeling of not sure or uncertain or, you know, that's a great thing about a motorbike. You know, I can leave my gear, I just can jump on that thing and just get out of there. But feel the space. And I've been lucky enough to be able to do that. And thus far, fingers crossed, everything's gone pretty good.
And along the way, while you're travelling, where will you be planning to put your head on a pillow at night?
Around Australia, it was a tent, and I've jumped into a single-man tent, which I felt very comfortable in. Asia's looking at accommodation. It's quite reasonable. So I've budgeted to stay in quite low-end facilities. I'm certainly not staying three-star because I do want to make it all the way financially. You know, backpackers, that as long to be honest, Karen, as long as my bike's secure and I've got something I can put over it and cover it and it's safe, I'm safe.
Well, you don't want anything to happen to my joy.
No, nothing wants to happen to my joy. But I've had some lovely people. A gentleman just recently did the trip that I'm about to do and he got back and he said, I've got an itch, Vic. I said, what do you mean you've got an itch? He said, well, I've got an itch. They think it's golden staph. I said, oh, golden staph, that's not good. I said, would you get it in a hospital or something? He went, no. He said, and then a week later we spoke, and a week later I said, how's the itch? And he went, oh, it's still there. They're still swabbing for bacterial virus, da, da, da. Anyway, it ends up being scabies.
That doesn't surprise me.
He didn't know, and that's something I'm really, I've got a silk suit that I'm going to wear when I go to bed, and someone said to me I probably should sleep with my helmet on and put a little, so I don't get any bed bugs where I'm stuck. But I'll try to stay in non-big bug written places.
Well, I don't know how you avoid them except go around and inspect and have a look. I'm sure there'll be plenty of stories at the end to tell, and you're going to come back with so many amazing memories. Along the way, how are you going to record every daily event?
I have a drone that I took around Australia, which I did a YouTube. I've got two GoPros that I mount on the bike. So one on the right-hand side, so I'll cover my trip on the road and the vista. I'll have a microphone on my helmet, so I'll be able to talk with that and talk about what's going on. A drone, occasionally I'll put up a little bit of interviews on my iPhone, put it all together. I've got a crew. I have a wonderful daughter doing my social media back here and a young gentleman sifting together all my footage and putting together a nice little YouTube channel.
Wow, that'll be amazing. And when you come back, you'll have to come and do a live story at the Story Room. I'm sure everyone would love to hear your story of your adventures. If people want to donate to this, to your charity, because you just tell us a little bit about the charity and how people can help you to raise money for them. Because this is not about raising money for you to travel. It's about raising money for a community that helped you to get back on your feet after you lost your parents.
Yeah, and sadly, that community, and I think this is what also kicked me into gear, is that community, the Yakaba Centre in Nelson Bay, lost all their stake funding, Karen, as has many community facilities around Australia, I've been told, and that it's an area where if you're isolated as we are on a peninsula, you can't drive an hour to go and see a counsellor because you just don't have the energy or the inclination to drive for 40 minutes to an hour to put yourself back together, where it's someone that can either come to you or you can walk to them. And it's a community that without them, I wouldn't be comfortable with my daughter living in the area because I need that community place for her to know that she can get help. Just because you are not well mentally, there's also an association of disabled. So they're building ramps and lifts and trying to be able to access everyone around the community that needs help. And it's paramount to who we are and what we are as humans to be able to help your local community, because without them, I would not be here, 100%.
How important in life, and living life just normally every day, do you feel it is to get out in nature, to do something for yourself, like whether riding a bike or jumping in the ocean or doing a bit of yoga, but really generally being outside as much as you can? How important do you feel that is and why?
Karen, it's where I connect with life. I barely ever spend any time when the daylight, probably today's one of the first days. You can see I sail Mondays and Wednesdays, I outrigger Tuesdays and Thursdays, I walk Tuesdays, I play tennis Saturdays. I don't think that I'd have a balance of life if I was stuck indoors, not being able to get outside. I wouldn't be the person I am. I wouldn't be able to engage with life. It gives me fresh air, it gives me vitamin D, it gives me an ability to exercise and walk wherever I need to walk. And it just, and it also earths and balances me. I think that's really important to be able to be grounded on the earth as well. It is so important.
First of all, I would just like to say thank you so much. And I will share and connect with you along the way. I'm looking forward to following your journey. You've given me something else to be inspired by. And hopefully next year we will catch up. It would have been nice to have met you in person before you go, but that ain't going to happen, is it? No. So unless I come down and wave to you at the airport. But no, honestly, amazing that you're doing this. I mean, you've lived a very rich and full life, and it seems like you've done so many things in life. And I know you're trusting your gut, and you know you're going to get through this and get to the other side and have an amazing journey with my joy. And I think really, both your parents are going to be hanging in there looking out after you. Do you think that too?
Yeah. Look, I feel it. I know it. My daughter said to me, "Mummy, you're going to take the diary with you." And I was, I don't know. Should I take the diary? And I said, no. I know. I've got Dad's hanky. I've got Dad's comb. And I've got a little bit of jewellery of Mum and Dad. Plus, I've got a little bit of their ashes. So that's going to be with me on the way. Because they were so community focused, Mum ran the local community hall and Dad was very big part of the community and just getting out and saying hello to people and making them feel good, that they would be somewhat proud of the fact that I'm being able to give back to the community. Yeah. So, yeah.
I'm just going to say from my community that listens to this podcast, Sharing Stories, Changing Lives, I'm sure today you are helping to change a few lives just by inspiration alone, because I think we've talked about things today, not in just words, but in, like, resilience. We've talked about determination. We've talked about courage. We've talked about grief. We've talked about, you know, journeys in life. There's so many aspects of this conversation that, you know, all pulled together in this story. So we all wish you good luck.
Thank you, Karen. And just remember, Karen, we can't take life too seriously. There's got to be humour in it. It's so important to have a laugh. And you know what? I don't take myself too seriously, Karen, because I, as I said, 12 years on a bike, I'm no expert, but if I can do something like this, someone can tell me that they're going to jump on a plane for the first time, or they're going to get off the lounge and go and join aqua aerobics. Whatever end of the scale yours is, you don't have to compete. It's really important that you do what you want to do and what moves you, what gets you going. There's no competition in life. It's all about what's important to you.
Stay in your own lane.
Yeah, very much so. Just do what you can do. And I'm not doing it to inspire. I hope my granddaughter watches my videos in 20 years from now and says, "Oh, that was Nanny." Oh, I'm actually called Noppy. We're a combination of a nanny and a poppy. But I actually look back at these videos and goes, oh, yeah, Nan was pretty cool. She rode a bike around the
world. For sure she will. Cheerio, everyone. And we're going backstage to have a little bit of a chat now.
Thank you for tuning in to Sharing Stories, Changing Lives. We'd like to invite you to support us by purchasing a Backstage Pass, costing about the same as 2 cups of coffee each month. With the Backstage Pass, you'll gain access to workshops and exclusive content, including videos from our live events. You can do this by visiting our website at www.thestoryroom.au. We can continue to show that sharing stories changes lives.